Well, we can just go ahead and start. The order of the agenda, you've gotten two agendas today, I do believe. I'm having trouble keeping up with all the emails, but we're going to go in the order of first looking at the minutes, but we're going to have the reports first, and then we will move to academic affairs last. So that's what how we're going to do it. I think one of the agendas had that down properly. Let me first, what do we need a roll call? Who will do the roll call? Janet, Francina?
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Berzin.
Present.
Mr. Dannenberg.
Present.
Dr. Jackson.
Present.
Dr. Oyedele.
Okay.
Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you very much. First, the usual first agenda item is minutes. And with apologies, my understanding is that they are not yet ready for review, and we'll have them ready for the June board meeting to go back over. So moving right along, I'd like to begin, please, with a report from Dr. Littleberry to catch us up on what's going on in student development.
Thank you, Dr. Berzoni.
That's right. Every letter gets pronounced in an Italian name. Every, even
absolutely.
The ones that are identical.
Absolutely. Mr. Rivers, you. Would you put up the share the presentation, please? Thank you. Good evening, trustees. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you with an update from the Division of Student Success and Development. Next slide, please. As outlined in the strategic plan, the university has established a total enrollment goal of 6,000 students by 2029. This evening, I would like to begin with an update on enrollment. The university continues to experience strong enrollment momentum across the undergraduate pipeline. Total enrollment increased from 3,721 in spring 2025 to 3,933 students in spring 2026. This represents an increase of 212 students or a 5.7% increase. The Office of Financial Aid has awarded more than 3,728 students a total of $165,876 in federal student aid for this academic year. FAFSA submissions for the 2026-2027 academic year. To date, we have received 5,000 applications. This is on pace with the we've received 5,237 financial aid applications, which is on pace with the 5,000 applications we have already received for admissions for next academic year. Next slide, please. With our undergraduate enrollment, by rose by 6.4%, reflecting strengthened retention and progression with our continuing students and first-time and college students. And as a result of this, one of the things we realized is that we needed assistance with being able to support these students. And so in alignment with our strategic plan, again, beginning with the 2026-27 academic year, the university will reinstate the athletic and recreation fee. The athletic and recreation fee of $105 and the student center fee of $140. For a total of $245 per semester in student fees, which were temporarily waived during the COVID-19 pandemic due to restricted campus access and limited student programming. With the full restoration of in-person operations, athletics competition, recreation facilities, and student engagement activities, the conditions that warranted the waiver no longer exist. Reinstating these fees aligns with student charges, with the services and infrastructure now fully operational and in active use, ensuring sustainable support for essential campus programs and facilities. The reinstated fees support intercollegiate athletics programs and other student athletic services, campus recreation and wellness facilities, intramural sports, student center operations, and student organization programming and leadership development. In alignment with the strategic plan and the DC comeback plan, these programs help to ensure we are able to meet goal 2, and more specifically, objective 2.1 of our strategic plan, which focuses on providing a fulfilling and affirming experience for all students through campus life. They are central to student engagement, fostering a strong sense of belonging and enhancing overall campus vitality. These key factors are closely linked to student retention and success. Based on projected enrollment of 4,423 students in fall 2026 and 4,058 students in spring 2027, total mandatory fee revenue for academic year 26-27 is projected at approximately $3.65 million, of which roughly $2 million will be attributable to the reinstated fees. This action restores stable, reoccurring revenue stream that supports core student-facing services while maintaining the university's commitment to avoiding tuition increases. The administration will communicate this change transparently to students and families, emphasizing both the rationale for the reinstatement and the value supported by these fees. Next slide, please. At the start of the academic year, we transitioned to a new professional advising model. I've mentioned this previously. As a part of our transition, one of the metrics we began to track, was advisor progress with continuing student registration from the opening of the registration window to the first week of classes or through the first week of classes. I'm pleased to report tonight that continuing student registration for the start of this term was up by 6.4%. Students registering prior to the start of the term not only helps the student prepare for the upcoming term, but it also informs academic affairs of additional sections of course or courses that may be needed well before the term begins. Tracking this metric also helped move the needle on student persistence from fall to spring, as our rate rose by an average of 2.8%, with community college students making the largest gain of 4.6%. Our academic advising team conducted more than 1,300 student checkups, basically checking on their students and their caseloads prior to the start of the term, which led to these gains. Next slide, please. Student success and development works in partnership with our academic affairs colleagues to help students. As we continue to strengthen our partnership, we can see the impact of working collaboratively in the area of student alerts. Our faculty response rate grew from 32% in spring 2025 to 38% in fall 2025. And for our current term, we achieved a faculty response rate of 53%. At the conclusion of the fall term, 36.5% of students with a negative alert earned a C or better in courses for which the alert was raised.
That's great news.
It is great news. And then with another subdivision within the division, the Office of Student Development, or the Subdivision of Student Development, the Office of Advocacy and Student Support, partnered with our workforce development to help students stay engaged and succeed by offering both online and in-person workshops tailored to their needs. Through virtual sessions like Welcome to College, We Need to Talk, and interactive hands-on experiences such as the Create Your Vision for the Future, students gain practical tools for navigating their educational journey. These workshops guided students in understanding that college is a significant transition, whether they are coming directly from high school, returning for career training, or balancing work while attending classes. Above all, they reinforced that college is a commitment, not to create fear, but to prepare students for challenges ahead so they can thrive. By partnering with workforce development, students gained access to community resources, guidance, and situational focused support. Power Trio. So our TRIO program, along with, a trio of offices, our Accessibility Resource Center, our CASE program, which is at the community college, and the library, partnered together to offer student success, to offer a student success collaborative, which was a cross-departmental engagement initiative designed to streamline student access to UDC's core academic support services through a unified high-impact experience. Co-hosted by the Accessibility Resource Center, tutoring, and the UDC Library, the event positioned academic support as an integrated ecosystem rather than an experience that students could have through siloed offices. Through a structured panel discussion and interactive resource stations, students receive practical guidance on accommodations, tutoring, coaching services, research tools, where to find study spaces, and help seeking strategies while engaging in real-world academic scenarios and live scheduling demonstrations. The initiative reinforced early intervention, normalized proactive support utilization, and advanced UDC's commitment to student success, equity, and persistence. Finally, the Unit of Student Development will open sometime early summer, the Flame of Freedom Veterans Center. This center is a new initiative which is sponsored by Title III. It will provide a dedicated space designed to support the academic success, community engagement, and overall well-being of our student veterans. This center has been modeled after other veteran centers at other institutions, and we look forward to having a hub where our veteran students can connect, study, relax, and build camaraderie with their peers and mentors. Next slide. Within athletics, our student athletes always perform well, and they always show up with a mindset to be as competitive as they can and to compete for championships. Our student athletes concluded the fall semester with a strong 3.3 GPA average as a total average across our student athletes, contributing to an overall 3.2 cumulative GPA for all student athletes. Notably, 25 of our student athletes earned perfect 4.0 GPAs, and 83 of our 109 athletes achieved a 3.0 or higher. On February 15th, our women's indoor track and field team delivered an exceptional performance at the East Coast Conference Indoor Championship, finishing second overall among 11 teams at Ocean Breeze Stadium in Staten Island, New York. The Firebirds secured 5 individual event titles, set multiple seasonal personal records, established new East Coast Conference records, and earned several all-conference honors. And some of the students that we have on this slide, Kendra Hines is a sophomore. She set a new UDC and East Coast Conference record in the 60-meter hurdles, ranking her 15th nationally. She also won the 60-meter dash with a personal best of 7.65 seconds, the fastest time in the East region this season. Kayla Cooper, a senior, captured her fourth ECC indoor title in the 200 meter with a time of 25.6 seconds. Samantha Morrison finished second in the 800 meter with a personal record of 2 minutes 15 seconds. And Emanuela, and I always mess up her last name, Kumami, I think is the correct pronunciation, successfully defended her ECC weight throw title with a mark of 17.7 millimeters. And with that, we'll go to my last slide, Franika.
Wait, where are the men? Oh, there they are. They're athletics.
So we talked just briefly at the before the meeting started about our Honda All-Star team. I know you're probably tired of me talking about our Honda All-Star team, but we are so proud of them. Our team was invited to the national championship in California. The president and I went out to support them. And I'm pleased to report that out of the 32 teams, they broke us into 8 divisions with 4 teams in each division. We won our division. And as the president noted, we beat our former institution, Florida A&M University. We beat them twice. So you have that screen on this slide where we beat them one of those times. Unfortunately, we didn't make it out of the round of 16. But I am pleased to report that one of our students, Savannah Aguilar Harrison, was recognized as one of the top scorers in the entire tournament. And so we were very surprised when they started naming, you know, all of these top student competitors. We were surprised and excited for her and for our team. Our team represented us well, and we should all be proud of them. And with that, trustees, this concludes my presentation tonight.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions, comments?
Most questions.
Pardon me? Do you have questions?
Questions. Dr. Littleberry, early on you mentioned $61 million in what you said was federal financial aid.
Uh-huh.
Any institutional aid, or do we only do we not provide institutional aid? If we do provide institutional aid, how much do we provide?
We do provide institutional aid. We are, and some of that comes through scholarship dollars. I will tell you that this semester, some of the institutional aid that we provided, aside from scholarship dollars through our scholarship university platform, we provided $189,000 to help support students to secure re-enrollment for the spring term.
So relatively little, very, very little, an institutional aid is provided. Is that correct?
If you consider $189,000, very little.
Relative to $61 million, yes, I do.
Okay.
I see Trustee Jackson has her hand raised, so I'll defer until she goes. Go ahead.
Okay. Trustee Jackson.
Thank you. I just wanted to see, first of all, it sounds like thank you for the wonderful report. And I was just curious, do we do anything for champions, like when the athletes are recognized, or they win their division, or is there anything that we do for them? Do they get rings or anything of that nature?
Thank you, Trustee Jackson, for the question. As of last year, we started with providing championship rings in partnership with the foundation. We have our annual student athletic banquet coming up, and at that time, we will talk about what we will do for leading up to that, we'll talk about what we will do for our athletes.
Dannenberg.
Yeah, I may have not interpreted this correctly, so I want to be sure. I thought you said, Dr. Littleberry, that the total athletic and student life budget was $3.65 million. Is that correct?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, what is it? Because you mentioned $2 million in fees. What's the total budget?
Well, what I said was that with the reinstatement of the fees, we're projected to generate revenue at $3.65 million.
So how does that match up to the spent to the cost of the program?
So not all of those revenues, those are student fee revenues. Those are not revenues that go specifically to athletics. The student fee generation is pulled into the university's overall budget and is used to help support the university overall. Some of those fees will come to us, will come directly to these programs and help to support the programs, as I mentioned. We've not yet determined internally how much of that will come directly to the programs.
Well, let me try this. I thought you said that there were 109 athletes. Is that correct?
There are.
Yeah. And how big is the athletic budget?
So the athletic budget is about $2 million. And I may be off a few dollars. I can get the actual amount.
$2 million for 109 athletes? Mm-hmm. Or is it $2 million for everyone in the institution that's making use of the athletic facilities and so forth?
For athletics.
Okay. So,
sorry, Trustee Denenberg, are you?
Yeah, we're spending $20,000 per athlete.
You asked me the budget.
Is that correct?
If that's what it equates to, I haven't done the calculation.
I'm sorry, Trustee Oedeli. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you.
That's okay. Well, welcome, Trustee Oedeli. We're glad you're here. I think there are a lot of interesting things that just in the point of understanding that maybe sometime in the future, Dr. Littleberry, mm-hmm. we can look at and study these things.
Sure.
I'm very interested in, for example, how much of that federal aid is grants and how much of it is loan. You know, how encumbered are our students with loan? There's no need to go into it now. But maybe sometime you could just educate us on some of these questions. My concern, for example, on fees is whether the students know it's coming and when do we start publicizing that as an additional cost to the cost of tuition and attendance.
Right. So we initially met with our student leadership and talk to them about it. They were in support of bringing the fees back. And now that we have shared this information with the trustees, we will begin in earnest communicating this information out.
Right. They're of course going to know what new is going to happen for them.
Absolutely.
Programmatically with those fees. And yes. I'm sure you must have some things. What are they?
A couple. So we have really ramped up our student programming and the types of programs that we offer, the level and extent of the, you know, that we're offering these programs. Students are asking us, we have about 40 student clubs and organizations. Those student clubs and organizations will be supported through some of these fees. And so as we work to extend the programming that we do and what we can offer, this will help with that. We've been pretty limited these last couple of years. And so this will help to extend what we can do and give us room to grow with the offerings that we have. And students certainly ask for, there are things that they asked for homecoming that we didn't have the funding to support. And in addition to that, there are other types of programming that they would like to see. We're at a point now where we will do our end of year survey about the programming that has been offered through Student Life, in addition to the types of programming that they would like to see in the future. And we'll use that information to help us plan out our next academic year with Student Life programming.
Super. Any other comments or questions? And I'm reminded that the president often says that he wants to make it feel like a residential college, even though it can't yet be. And I think a lot of that will be through good use of these student activity funds.
Yes.
And I just wanted to add, if the committee is interested in learning more about the athletics budgets, thought a little bit would come back, because I do not want you all to leave the meeting confused about what we mean when we say athletics budget. There's a total budget for the athletics program, right? And then within the total budget, there are certain expenses. Some have to do with student aid, grant aid. Some have to do with coaching salaries, travel costs, facility maintenance. There's a whole bunch of things, right, related to university athletics. So I just want to make sure that you all have an opportunity to really get a clear picture of if you want it, right, and maybe an upcoming meeting, so that you can have the right perspective and put these numbers in context, right? So, Trustee Dannenberg, I don't want you to even say, oh, you're spending X number of dollars per student. You need the full picture to understand, one, if that number is correct, and then what does that number mean relative to the overall budget? And then also, if you want to benchmark it against our peers, we can give you that information. I just want to make sure we get you the total picture.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm supportive of athletics. I'm just trying to get a handle
on how
much is being spent on it. And given that we're increasing fees, a not insignificant amount.
Yeah. Oh, and let me say that too. Dr. Littleberry said this, but I'm going to emphasize it. We're not increasing fees on top of fees. We are reinstating fees that we used to charge, right? So basically, we've been subsidizing and we've been covering the costs for a lot of services that the students receive. And now we're at the point where we're saying we can't continue to do that. And so I don't want you all, again, thinking we're increasing fees that exists, right? It's really, we've been just carrying the weight for the last several years. For these things. And now Dr. Littleberry and the team is saying, we're not able to offer the bandwidth of services for the students because we don't have those fees to tap into and all the COVID relief funds and all those things. Those funds, as you all read, they're gone, right? So now it's back to business as usual. So that's what we're doing. I just want to make sure y'all understand that as well.
But of course, we have the historical perspective, which you've just given us. The students have a personal perspective that doesn't include any savings for them from their point.
Oh, no, you're right.
I'm sure you'll handle it well. Any other comments or questions on Dr. Littleberry's report? Obviously provocative in a good way. And we'll look forward to studying some more. Thank you. Thank you very much. May we move on then? And I'll ask Trustee Dannenberg to take us through the outcome status report.
Sure. I'll try and be brief. It's really a summary and commentary of the good work provided by Dr. Littleberry, Dr. Tate, Dr. Bird, Dr. Carter, Dr. Green, a variety of the staff members on the Student Success Leadership Team put together by President Eddington. I'd say there's sort of four big batches of items to report. The first is that community college outcomes, which at UD are encouraging. If the data is to be believed, and I'm looking for confirmation on it, but at one time, the UDC community college completion rate was 8%. That is a crisis. It appears that increased to 14%, and now this year is up to, the most recent data is up to 22%. If that is confirmed, that is extremely heartening. That's a 50% increase year over over the prior year. And at this rate, you would be talking about a doubling of completion rates in a mere 2 year span of time, if those numbers are correct. It's still below peers, including Montgomery County College, Prince George's College, College, Community College in Cleveland, the Cleveland area of Ohio, but definitely progress in the right direction. Bachelor degree outcomes are suboptimal. Only 40% of students who begin at UDC are completing a bachelor's degree within 6 years of initial enrollment.
What was that number again? I'm sorry.
40%.
40%, okay.
That that is not as good as peers. It's not as good as aspirational peers. And regardless of where peers stand, it shouldn't be something that is acceptable to us. But the hope is that a lot of the practices that staff is employing, and some of which Dr. Littleberry described, will move the dial on that. There are early indicators that suggest, some of which suggest improvement, others of which are suggest falling back with respect to bachelor degree seeking students. The third year student retention rate has increased and increased markedly. So those students are much more likely to complete, and that's good. The good news. The bad news is that something called the DFW rate, the drop, fail, or withdrawal rate, is going up. And the DFW rate is a big indicator, particularly among first-year students, as to whether or not they're going to subsequently complete. Likewise, we don't have data, although we should, on on-time credit accumulation. This is the percentage of students who complete 24 credits within a academic year. In order to complete in 4 years, you want to complete 30 credits on average a year. In order to complete within 6 years, you want to complete 24 credits a year. If a student completes 24 credits within an academic year, they are 18 percentage points more likely to earn their degree within 6 years of initial enrollment than if they do not. And if a student doesn't earn their degree within 6 years of initial enrollment, they are highly, highly unlikely to ever earn their degree. There is a small percentage of students that stick with it for 7, 8, 9 plus years and eventually get that degree. But that percentage is very, very small. So you really want students to complete within that 6 year time frame. And we've got a long way to go with respect to bachelor degree seeking students completing within that time frame. The third bucket is what I referenced earlier, and Dr. Littleberry referenced briefly, so-called high impact practices to boost student success. What the research indicates is that use of predictive analytics, what I like to call Moneyball for higher education, and use of case managers, folks who provide high touch services to help students complete, can have a major impact on student completion. And there's been a major investment at UDC in those practices. And I think that's probably what is driving the improvement at the community college level. Hopefully that will show up at the baccalaureate level, but currently is not. There is among the high impact practices, in addition to predictive analytics and use of case managers, there's the early alert system that Dr. Littleberry referenced, which is a proven effective practice. There's been an increase, a dramatic increase, in the percentage of students who are enrolled full-time as opposed to part-time at the community college level. That also, research indicates, has a big, big impact on student completion. Students who are enrolled full-time complete at a rate that's three times that of students who enroll part-time exclusively. So that we are increasing full-time enrollment at the associate degree level is very promising. Unfortunately, at the baccalaureate degree level, the percentage of students that are enrolled full-time is not increasing. That's why I asked the question earlier about financial aid, because financial aid is a potential way to leverage, can be leveraged to move students from part-time to full-time status if directed in that manner. Finally, there's also, as described by Dr. Massey, and she can expound on it, apparently embedded in faculty evaluation, the performance evaluation, is consideration of student success. How much weight that is entailed in that process was not reported, but faculty play an enormous role in whether or not students are going to get a DF or W in a particular course, which goes on to play a large role in their likelihood of completion. Not discussed as a practice going forward, that I think UDC should be thinking about, and was raised during the Student Success Task Force meeting, in addition to financial aid leveraging, is UDC's role in encouraging better academic preparation at the secondary school level, vis-a-vis DCPS or the DC Public Charter School Board, given that over half of DC students are charter students, charter school students. Academic preparation, or specifically high school curricular rigor, has been found to be the number one indicator of post-secondary completion, more influential than race, family income, or parent education, whether or not students are taking a college prep track in high school. The one area, and I'll stop, this is the fourth bucket, I asked the question about the accountability plan discussed at the task force level, was that there is an accountability plan, which I would say is the start of an accountability plan, and President Eddington is to be commended for initiating that, whereby a lot of these figures are being reported to the board. Presumably, my understanding is for the first time. I think that's great, that it's only a first step, I at least, as a board member, would like to see an accountability plan that extends beyond reporting to the board, things like reporting to the public, incentive structures, interventions, accountability for the senior staff, accountability for those below the senior staff level, by the senior staff, more robust accountability overall. In the K-12 space, that has been proven effective in improving outcomes. A lot of people don't like accountability, but it works. So that's the report out from the Student Success Task Force meeting in terms of outcomes, practices, and prospects going forward. You're muted, Chair Barzani.
Thank you. I say thank you very much. It's very interesting and challenging and exciting to hear the whole picture as you lay it out. Who would like to comment? Anyone? Questions? Comments? No?
I'm hoping Trustee Oyedele, to put him on the spot, will offer at some point in time, if not now, suggestions for a role that UDC might be able to play with respect to secondary school student improvement, academic preparation, given his vast experience in the field.
Super. And his hand is up. Mr. Oyedele.
I mean, I did have a question around other barriers besides financial aid to increasing the part-time student enrollment to more full-time, but certainly the work to foster partnerships with secondary schools is pretty critical. I had the opportunity to connect with some folks from the Dawn Initiative at Anacostia High School very recently, and I thought that was a pretty strong example of where collaboration with UDC and K-12 can flourish. And so was interested to learn more about that, and certainly welcome additional conversations on ways to strengthen ties between DCPS and DC charter schools to ensure that there are early college programs available to more students, because I think that's one way to, you know, fast track folks towards that 4-year degree program.
I've long been very jealous of Trinity College, which is, has an early college program going on, and the tuition gets paid by the city.
That's right.
So Trinity tuition is paid by the district for this early college initiative that Trinity alone, I believe, has.
Yeah, I'm not.
UDC has an early college program.
We do now? Good.
Yeah, we've had it for a couple of years.
Have we? Do we get our tuition paid by the district?
No, they don't pay the tuition.
So is that correct? Because I understood, like, there are 9 students from Anacostia graduating from Anacostia with a 2-year degree. Is that, and that's paid entirely by UDC? Is that incorrect? That's correct?
Yeah. We fund the bulk of the costs for the program.
Okay.
Good fundraising goal.
If I could pipe in
here. We do want, just to touch on the funding, we are working to expand the program. And one of the goals around expansion is at some point to have the district contribute to some of those costs. And then we also are working on a district-wide comprehensive proposal around dual enrollment. I mean, it's a big deal, but we're not ready to share it with you all yet. But there are a bunch of plans internally about, you know, us being more of a driver for dual enrollment early college programming across the district in partnership with DCPS and the charter school sector.
Right.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to talk more about that. I mean, I, for some reason, thought OSSE would be required to at least redirect some of the per pupil funding, given that these students are under the age of 22, I believe, and are still currently enrolled in District of Columbia Public Schools. It seems pretty strange that you all would have to absorb all of the costs and that no portion of the per pupil goes to UDC if they're being educated there. So anyways, you can certainly talk more about that. That is something that sparked some wondering for me.
I agree completely. If I can just add one thing, as some of you may know, I'm also the Deputy Commissioner for Higher Ed for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Massachusetts has 10,000 early college high school students. Wow. Because the program has been so successful, Governor Healey has set a goal of 100,000 early college high school students within the next 10 years. The research in Massachusetts has indicated that early college high school students, including low-income students, including low-achieving students, are matriculating into higher education at a rate greater than their peers. Mm-hmm. And among low-achieving students in eighth grade, they are not only matriculating at a rate greater than their peers, they are also persisting at a rate greater than their peers. It's one of the better secondary school strategies that the Commonwealth is seeing, and a reason why the governor is doubling down. And in Massachusetts, the state provides funding to institutions for the costs associated with early college high school enrollment.
That's fabulous.
Oh, yeah. And Dr. Massey, correct me on one point. We pay the cost for the instruction and transportation and food, and OSSE does pay the tuition for the student.
Okay.
Sorry. Yep.
Good. Next, the rest of the costs. Okay. Any more comments, observations, questions? Really terrific information. Thank you. It gives us all something to work on and think about. Provost Massey, you're up. If we're finished with this piece of the agenda from Academic Affairs, do you have a report?
I have a really brief report. I just wanted to update on the law school dean search. Right. So we have narrowed to 3 candidates who will be visiting the campus during the first weeks of May. And we will have a finalist presented to the board for academic and student affairs for the May-June meetings.
Great.
Did we?
Are you happy
did
with
we do
your
the
pool?
Church?
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Amanda, no, you go ahead. I didn't know you were lurking there.
Dr. Massey, did we use an outside firm or was this an internal search firm?
An internal search.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments about that particular item? Anything else, Dr. Massey?
No, except that we will also be bringing to the board for the May-June meetings tenure recommendations.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, time for us to talk about the MSW proposal. And I would like the privilege of the chair to guide us through this a bit. At our March meeting, we delayed a final vote on the MSW, the Masters of Social Work program, because we wished to think and research some more on the proposal. We also we plan to finish it up by this meeting so that its implementation could proceed apace. And I trust we will make that happen tonight. This proposal is a very important one for both the district and the university. Its purpose is to prepare behavioral health specialists to help meet district needs. And the more I read about this program and what is being sponsored, the more excited I became for the university and proud of the recognition it's getting. It's meaningful not only because it serves the important role of preparing professionals who tend to the people of the district in their myriad of problems at a time when there are shortages of trained professionals to help people cope with hunger, addiction, and a myriad of other problems. This project also helps grow the university in very important ways and not just serve the district. It both academically and financially. There's nearly $1.25 million already in first year funding coming our way, and over $6 million in the initial years. I'm not quite sure how many those it goes out for hiring faculty and other programmatic needs. One of the things that's very exciting is that it will fund students for whom I think, Dr. Massey, you said there are already 100 bona fide students in that group for, I think it's 20-some positions in the initial group. On the waiting list, they thought at one point were 300 people. So they've gone through guaranteeing by looking more closely at the applicants and their qualifications. But more benefits for the students. Not only will they attend tuition-free, but they will also receive a package consisting of funds for other academic costs and stipends for living and transportation. So it's a wonderful thing for students. In exchange, the graduates must work for the district for 2 years, but that means that they will have a job waiting for them upon completion, which is in itself an asset. So there's strong support from the council and from Chairman Mendelson, as well as inside from UDC. So why did we as a community, as a committee, ask to hold it a bit? Because we needed to understand it better. And also, some of us had concerns about the Title I concentration in the program. I do not feel we need to go into the debate now, since the motion we will offer momentarily will be to approve the program and all of its concentrations as proposed by the faculty. The faculty made a persuasive case. I just lost my place here. They just made a persuasive case for approval now, based primarily on the timing of accreditation, and also allowed that there could be possible change later, after accreditation. And this report to us echoed the comment of an accreditor. This will prevent us from making this a requirement to be, let me start over again. The risk of stopping this proposal and entering new changes to them at this time would be that our program would go lower in the queue for accreditation at a time when there are many competitors for starting new programs. So we can take up consideration of any issues in a cooler environment sometime during the first year of the program's life when, if we wish, as the program director suggested, after the program has already been accredited. The committee should understand the program better at that time, and it may not even continue to be an issue for us. And so that, so be it. That would be great. So for now, I hope we will decide as a committee tonight to move forward in full support of this program that holds great promise for the district and the university. As a gesture of good faith that we have in the faculty, I do not believe we should attach the intention to try to modify the program later or to have that be viewed as a condition of the approval moment. The approval motion. I do ask, however, that it be understood and agreed that it is everyone's intention to put this program on the committee's docket, the Academic Affairs Committee docket for next year. And I might say that another conclusion I have, for discussion only, another conclusion I have reached personally is that it would be good to brief this committee on academic proposals in the incubator in the future before they're in final form and scheduled for a confirming vote. I haven't been in this committee the whole time that the program is being thought about, so maybe it was mentioned earlier to the Academic Affairs Committee. But I certainly wish our committee had known about it earlier than so close to deadlines. So we should not have proposals coming to us when they're in final form and scheduled for a confirming vote. And so with gratitude to you, Dean Massey, and whose work had me nattering at you the last few days and trying to understand, and to the faculty for their additional work to brief this committee and the huge effort that went into the proposal, and I might say, on behalf of this committee, the efforts of this committee to find compromise, I would like to ask for a motion to approve the MSW proposal as submitted. And now I would like to ask for a brief discussion that does not include the issue of the naming controversy and move, hopefully, to a confirming vote. The proposal will then be brought to the board for final approval on May 6th. Which seems especially important under the circumstance in which we are in terms of timing now. But first, I want to thank you, and I'd like to move to approve that this committee approve the proposal for the MSW program before us. Each of you has a copy, I believe, in the appendices that were sent to you with how to sign on to the call tonight, but I'd like to read just three paragraphs out of a rather lengthy set of paragraphs to put the motion formally on the floor. Whereas pursuant to DC official code, the Board of Trustees is authorized to establish or approve policies and procedures governing admissions, curricula, programs, graduation, the awarding of degrees, and a general policy for the components of the university. And whereas new associate, baccalaureate, and graduate degree programs may be added to the university curricula upon recommendation by the University Senate and the President and after approval by the Board. And, jumping to the end, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the implementation of the Master of Social Work degree program in accordance with the attached proposal. We did not send the entire proposal, but in accordance with the proposal as received previously. So I so move this this proposal, and I would like to ask for a second. Is there a second?
This is BC, I second.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And now I'd like to call for any discussion, but I remind you, I've made a request, please, that we not relitigate the discussion and that it be on the proposal in the motion of how to move it forward only. Are there comments? Dr. Jackson.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the resolution. I greatly appreciate Dr. Manson and her team who provided additional information, and I look forward to voting in the affirmative for this resolution.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Is there any other commentary, any thoughts? Shall we call the question? Please read the roll. Let's move to a vote now, please. Could you call the roll, Ms. Joyner?
Yes. Dr. Berizzoni?
Aye.
Mr. Danneberg?
Aye.
Dr. Jackson?
Aye.
Dr. Oyedele?
Aye.
The motion passed unanimously. Thank you. Didn't mean to usurp your lines there.
No problem at all. No problem.
That's terrific. Thank you. Thank you very much. And finally, I do request that Provost Massey please place further discussion of the MSW in the spring of 27 for the Academic Affairs Committee for us to continue discussion. Most importantly, to see the program as it's underway and being implemented. I can't imagine it won't be approved at the board on May 6th. Are there further comments or topics for the good of the whole? There being none or seeing none, I would take a motion for closure of the meeting, ending the meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Aye. Thanks, everybody. Aye.